Following podcast contains profanity and is unsuitable for a child-friendly or work environment.
Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
We're back after our interview with Leon. What a nice chap.
He was very nice.
Yeah, it often surprises me how nice, kind of mature-ish, not that he's old, but like non-child wargamers are. The childish wargamers that you come across, you know, like people who are like, you know, the ones I'm talking about. Just take it all a little bit too seriously.
Yeah.
But yeah, mature adult wargamers generally are fantastic. Crew, fantastic bunch.
I thought it was really interesting that he was doing that as a range, and he hasn't played War Master. He just likes doing it. It's like,
yeah, but he does play another game.
He's not doing it out of a
sense of complete altruism.
No.
A game where there are no Dark Elves for that game either.
Yeah, it's cool.
I mean, that is the great thing about your 10 mil wargaming. Not that the basing is that interchangeable, unfortunately. That's something that somebody should be able to come up with a solution for. But if I want to play with 10 mil a war game, and I could play Kings of War, I could play Mini Hammer, or I can play Warmaster.
Mm-hmm.
And they've all got their groups, or Facebook groups, and they've all got the people that are devoted players. I mean, fanatical players of those systems.
Yeah.
Right, so what have we got to talk about? I think we've only done about half an hour-ish, so we've got a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're...
Obviously you've got to paint, because why? I mean, it's not like you've got anything else to do in this fucking COVID land that you haven't even got an hour spare to record, but you're painting some Napoleonics, no doubt, at the wrong scale.
Oh, well, yeah, but I don't have an hour spare to... I go to work, Barry.
Everybody goes to work. Everybody hurts sometimes.
Yeah. Are we talking about the... your wrap-up.
Oh, I want to see what you're painting, you...
Oh, sorry. It's not.
We've only got 5% of your attention... So might as well see what the other 95% of your attention has been focused on.
Is Napoleonics.
What? Well, go on, get it up. Let's have a look.
Just some of the regular line infantry. That's all.
That must be soul destroying, doing like fucking hundreds of them bastards.
Well, you split it between the main projects and then like minor projects. And so the main project is Napoleonics, but I won't do it all in like, until finish, like I'll do like a unit and then I'll go into a minor project with something a bit more color, etc. So I am painting these Napoleonics with a limited range of paints and to cut down on the time that they're taking.
So yeah, you're telling me you're not doing buttons and cuffs?
No.
Oh, you're so full of it. I knew you were never doing buttons and cuffs. You see these fellas doing 28 millimeter Napoleonics. It must take them like 3 hours a miniature. You got to be mad.
It must do. I mean, but when you consider the table and the amount of models on it, et cetera, at that scale, it's like it doesn't. I mean, yeah, I suppose theoretically, I don't know, say I wanted to go back over them and do even more detail on them. I mean, if you look at like a British Redcoats, Hussars are the British Redcoat. They've got not so much white cross pieces over the front of their jacket. It's just like, yeah. And then how would you paint that? It's just unbelievable. I mean,
I couldn't think of a worse painting project than trying to do 28 mil Napoleonics. It's just like,
No. It's not like
modern warfare where it's all kind of green or camo or something like.
Yeah, but hang on, Barry. But that's an incentive to do it, isn't it? Because it's like whenever I do, like you were talking to me recently about bolt action. Well, that stuff doesn't take any time to paint.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but is it really painting then?
I think you'll find it is.
Yeah, but if everything's in khaki or a desert tan, then it's just a process, isn't it? It's just like
you're on the opposite side to me and Rick Priestley about the tyranny of the painted miniature, are you?
Go on, explain.
So when I first started wargaming in Catford, southeast London, as an adult, they used to have a... basically, there was a break in the middle of the game session. It was like a 4-hour session. And that was the point where you could book the table for the following week, because you could only book the following week by being at the meeting and writing your name on the board and stuff.
Right.
Directly after that, they used to go round the tables as a committee and kind of comment on people's painting or lack of painting. And it's like, what?
Why? To what end?
What?
Why would they do
that? I don't know. To shame you into painting? I don't know.
To shame you? Like, so what, do they have a rule that no unpainted stuff?
Well, it wasn't a written rule. It was more like...
They would rather you use painted stuff.
Yes. So they'd come around and there was a whole lot of tutting and...
That's just old men. That's just old men being old men.
And positive reinforcement. You know, it really doesn't take a lot to paint, you know. It's half an hour a day. Fuck off!
No, I wouldn't. Well, I wouldn't have agreed to that. I wouldn't have agreed to that.
Three colours. That's it. Three.
Yeah, exactly.
Your layering and highlights and shit and go away. Three colours. Wash if you can be bothered. Get basic on it. Let's go. Let's play a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm all for these people who can do the art and they love the art. Like your John Webbs of this world. Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean. It's nice.
If you could do painting that well and it floats your boat, then great. Mm-hmm. But
right,
I think there comes a point where painting, especially if you're painting an army, you're not painting a single bloody display miniature, are you?
No, exactly. I mean, some things I've done over this past year have been like, I will have them out on display because that's, you know, it's then to inspire me with other things. So I've taken more time with them. But yeah, exactly. Army painting's a process.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Less layers to that process, the better. The less steps.
Yeah. But also, it takes an experienced painter to know what layers to cut out to give
all of
you
the buttons
most...
and cuffs.
No, but what layers?
Most of the webbing bits.
What steps to cut out that will still give a good look? You know, as in that can, don't have to go into too highlighting that color. It will look fine. Just that with an ink on it, for example.
Well, after this COVID, man, I'm going to go and do a video and I'm going to interview Rid. And he and I teaching people how to paint for wargaming.
I mean, I don't think
mind numbing.
I don't think the world's ready for that.
Literally, I see him knock stuff out and go, holy shit, man, how much stuff have you painted?
Yeah.
Works full time. It's not like he's unemployed or something.
No, I know.
He has a family and you go, what?
Like he put up a... So he did the this sprue of... That was on the magazine of American Civil War.
He painted that already?
Yeah, he just did it. Just did it like that. Yeah, and then he put it out on a group. And loads of comments because people were like, it hasn't even been delivered like to most people. And he's just done it. And it's just like, bloop. You know, like, it's his style. His style is nice. It looks good. It looks fine. You know, like, and people, like, honestly, it's just so much attention for him because he can just, like, historical wargamers tend to be quite slow painters, like, tend to be. And when you have a guy who will just produce it immediately, it just, I think it was like, it's almost like, that's not cricket. How are you doing that? Yeah.
Did you steal this from the manufacturer?
Literally. It was released? Like, have you had this 6 months? No, I've had this 6 minutes.
Damn, because I was hoping to borrow that off him and show it. But maybe he will lend me the painted stuff.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure he would. I mean, he just Rid's becoming quite a fan of. Well, I guess he always was a fan of historical gamers, but he is it's his chase for war games is changing.
Everybody's this. But he's going to paint me a bolt action army.
Well, that would take him like no time.
Well, that's what he said. He didn't even want anything for it.
No. It'll probably take him like two sessions or something. Yeah.
It makes me laugh. So anyway, one of the biggest things I found about 2020 is how my taste in wargaming is moving. It was always moving a little bit, but it definitely has jolted massively towards the historical side in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, with a bit of dabbling with the Napoleonics and now with bolt action and stuff, I think part of it is the readily available kind of differences, different manufacturers of miniatures. But part of it is also the shift away from just fucking codexes making shit up to sell stuff. Because historical stuff is based in reality, isn't it? There wasn't a super tank. Well, there was a super tank, but the but say the Italians needed a super tank in order to sell the Italian range. Well, it didn't fucking exist. So forget about it. There is no fucking super Italian tank.
Have to ally with the Germans to get that. Yeah, like,
well, I think they were invaded by that point.
Yeah, they didn't have that. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? If that was Games Workshop, they'd just invent a new fucking super Italian tank that you had to buy.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So that's nice. It's bolted in reality. You know if you're fighting with Russians, you're going to need millions of the gits because they're garbage. But you have millions of them.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I like.
So you're influenced by the themes of those factions to begin with, because the theme of that faction is that thing, is what they're known for.
Yeah, and it's also far less exploitable, because the GW model of, like, we don't make war games, we make miniatures.
Mm.
And we basically write rules to sell the miniatures. They're quite honest. They say, look, we're not making this miniature to sit on a shelf and never be sold. We're making this miniature so you're going to buy it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay.
So that's what they do. They're quite honest about it. The fact that they charge £120 or what is now for a fucking large model, bent as you like. And it's like,
if we're talking about their pricing scheme, it's when their pricing scheme is reflective on that model's role in the army. So your HQ choice, your classic is your Space Marine character, who's a little bit more fancier than a regular, well, Intercessor Marine. But because the army's going to have one or two of them at most, he's got a hefty price tag with him as well. There's not like three or four times the cost of material in there. It's a single model. It's just that single model is a Lord choice, and thus, you know, people are going to need to buy it, and you want to get more out of them for them to buy it. But
So I'll charge you 10 times as much.
Well, yeah. Well, you're comparing it to characters like characters in Napoleonics. They don't cost any more. Like, they're just,
well, why would they?
No, they don't, because everybody's fancy. And the generals is like that hussar is just as fancy as that general, you know. So characters are dirt cheap, and you end up accidentally having loads of them because they you can make characters out of spares in kits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I bought, because I've gone pretty far down the Rick Priestley rabbit hole recently.
Yep.
Is the Warriors of Irrawan, or what? I can't even pronounce it. It's no words.
So is this literally a rule set to use historical models for?
Not historicals. It's any models.
Oh, so, no, sorry. Yeah, not so, yeah.
So there's historical stuff. There's your Amazons, there's Greeks or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's also orcs and dwarves and elves and gnolls and halflings. And
Yeah.
I think there was on the interview I did with him, he was talking about some flying monkeys or something.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's an open system.
Yep.
Not tied to any miniature range at all. Although Warlord do sell a few bits, but it's generic kind of undead or orcs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels, when you read the rule book, it feels like just like something warm and snuggly. It feels like something you've grown up with. Because it is.
Okay. Yeah,
all the rule books that you imagine you've read over the years are probably influenced by not only Rick's writing and rules, but his kind of humour as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it just feels like comfortable.
Okay.
So I can't believe that he managed to get this rule book written and produced.
Mm.
Basically, it's a rule book that lives to be a rule book, a miniature agnostic rule book.
Yeah.
So you could have your round based Age of Sigmar stuff. And I could play against it with my square-based bloody foundry miniatures from 20 years ago.
Yeah. Make
a difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's really nicely written rulebook. And it's there are lots of modern takes on things like initiative and, you know, drawing dice out of bag and order dice. And it's just really well written book, and it's really...
Well, you would think if anyone knows like a rule set or how to write a rule set, that yeah, it would be Rick Priestley, wouldn't it?
It is. I think this is my, what do they call it? A magnus opus or whatever it is. It's like
my grand work.
Yeah, the grand work. This is it. I can't imagine anybody could make they call it skirmish based, but it's probably more like war machine skirmish. So maybe as many as 50 models, maybe 40, 50 models, something like that. I can't imagine anybody making a skirmish war game, fantasy based, that could be better than this game. I don't know what you could do that would make it.
Well, certainly he's got the name, hasn't he? Is in terms of trading on his name, like is in like, because if you wrote this rule set, everyone would be like, who cares?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, but like if Rick Priestley does it, he's like, he's got a name. Yeah.
But and the only thing that could destroy a game like this is, could you guess what it is?
What?
It's your tournament player.
All right. Yeah.
It's the bane of Steamforge games.
Yeah.
Game of War Machine and all those other fucking games that try to cater to tournament players who, in the end, eat the fucking game alive like a bunch of fucking leafcutter ants. So I don't think they pander to tournament players too much, which is probably the right way. I mean, if somebody wants to break a game system, they'll find a way to break it anyway. But trying to constantly rebalance a game, while what they can do here though is they don't have to sell miniatures. The game isn't about selling miniatures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even there's nothing in the army list that's not generic. So what miniatures are you trying to sell?
Yeah. Got it. Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it's where you get into a situation where you've got to find a way of selling new miniatures to people who've already bought the existing miniatures.
Yeah.
Do that is make them better than the stuff you've already bought.
Yeah.
Otherwise, mm-hmm. why would I buy it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I think 2020 for me has been the year of Warlord miniatures. I think they've done incredible things.
You've only been talking about them relatively recently. Yeah, like
since when? Since the summer?
Well, no, it really is like that. But no, like,
that's what I remember. You remember the Napoleonics game?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
And then one of the big things we've done this year is we've managed. Well, it wasn't. I've got to be honest. I didn't resurrect the fucking rules committee. I think Chris Orr and Jim between them resurrected the rules committee.
Yep.
But the rules committee has been well and truly resurrected.
Mm, definitely.
And we're about 10 days away from the real meat of the sandwich starting.
Oh, what, with the voting season?
The voting season. Although I have to be honest, I think the voting season's going to be a little bit subdued this year because...
Yeah, exactly.
Playtesting has there really been... Yeah,
no, exactly. Like, I don't think we'll have much to vote on.
I think there will be some amendments.
Mm-hmm.
But people have got to be realistic. You can't...
Yeah, exactly.
How much playtesting has been able to be done?
Well, no, they can't have been, you know, like, really. Like,
so unless it's glaringly obvious or, mm-hmm. or something that's kind of really not of giant change,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I don't think there's going to be much else done. But hopefully 2021 is a whole lot better than 2020 was.
Well, it can't be much worse, can it, Barry?
Well, it could. We could be in lockdown the whole bastard year, but let's pray to God that doesn't happen.
Well, no, we know we won't, though.
Well, you don't know you won't.
You do know you won't.
Oh, I don't know. I don't. No, we don't. What if the fucking vaccine doesn't work? What if the thing mutates? What if the thing only gives me like 3 months protection? I don't fucking know.
The first two questions are, you already know the answers. Your first two points. The third point, we don't know how long an immunity lasts, but I don't think it's going to be 5 minutes.
Oh, no. But maybe it's an annual process. Who knows?
But that's what I'd expect it to be.
Yeah, but I don't think they'll get the first lot immunized before we get around to the next, like the fourth bridge, in it. By the time you got to the end, you're already painting the beginning again.
So you're telling me that it's too much. So when you've got Oxford's vaccine, which is a fridge you can store in, so you can store it in your fridge if you wanted to, and it takes 30 seconds to jab somebody, you're telling me that that is too much, like, for the world to manage in like a short amount of time.
I think the economies of scale are going to prove quite difficult. When you've got 5 billion people to vaccinate annually, that's going to prove quite difficult.
Well, you've got suddenly you've got a lot. Yeah, you're doing. You've got very well. Got a lot of shares in that company, haven't you? But
I like the fact that Russia and China are trying to get quite a lot of soft power around the world by giving their vaccines away, even though they're not fucking nowhere near as well tested as ours, and people are moaning about ours.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, if it's a choice between no a free vaccine or I don't know, like
a free untested vaccine,
free untested. you'd be surprised, Barry. Like, I think that when it's like, here's the thing, if enough people get this jab, we can stop at being the way we are, people will move heaven and earth to have it done.
I hope so. I'm not scared of vaccine. I've had enough of them in my life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I know they don't come without risks because my family's been kind of affected by what they think was an allergic reaction to a vaccine very early in one of my kids' lives. So.
Right, okay.
Caused like, serious permanent damage. But you vaccines aren't 100%.
They never
without risk.
They never can be.
Well, they never would be, would they? But you do what you do because that's the sensible thing to do. It's all about herd, isn't it? It's not about a person.
Yeah.
You might have an allergic reaction to the vaccine personally, but as a society, as a race of humans, we're not, are we? That's what they're all about.
Mm-hmm. Right. It says in our notes here, 3D printing.
Oh, that's a big topic, isn't it? Holy moly.
So we're talking about 2020. We've got to talk about 3D printing.
It's a big topic though, isn't it?
Well, go on. We'll try and make it not. Say your thoughts on it.
I think, and we've talked about it a little bit. I mean, COVID was part of the reason that 3D printing happened like it happened this year, because people found themselves with a lot of time to sculpt and print. Mm-hmm. They maybe mm-hmm. wouldn't have had for this year. And it has 100% changed the way that the miniature landscape looks. And hopefully that's going to prove to be for the better.
Yeah.
One of the things that I said early on is, without IP to protect, how can people build a business on printing miniatures that everybody else can print at home? And I think that's where 2021, there's going to have to be a reckoning, maybe. Maybe excellent miniatures are showing the way in that they're doing their own ranges and say, we're not selling STLs because that's for sculptors to do. We can't build a business model on things we can't protect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe that'll be the future. Maybe. But then you're getting to the stage of like, well, I've got a 3D printer at home. What, am I not going to print anything? I'm just going to have to keep buying stuff. That doesn't work, does it?
No, I think that now the technology is there, that and the people and the skill is there. You cannot deny, for example, how good Forest Dragon's stuff looks. You can't deny it. It's like it looks amazing, and you can get pretty decent effects on a home printer. It's not easy, like as you found out, it's like it's not as simple as just plug the thing and turn it on, but you can get good effects at home. And then that opens up so much as in a game system of that is a 10 mil scale, where you can have theoretically STLs for every army out there, and you can just like, what do you want? Like, as in like, oh, I'll buy those STLs because I want to print this army, and I can at home. And it takes some time. It's not the simplest thing, but for those that wouldn't have the inclination to do such a thing like me, you can just buy them commercially printed, for not, I think, an unreasonable amount, for what you're getting. That's only for the best. Like, for me, it's a shame games aren't being played at the moment, because it would be lovely to see these armies on the table and be like, and it would bring new players as well. It can only be a good thing. I can't predict its future, but it's something that's been happening very recently is GW did another bit of information, not a lot, but a bit of information about their Warhammer the Old World when they go back
Everything's going back square, is it? What's the new bit? What's the new bit?
You not read it? You not seen it?
No. It said eventually everything turns back squares or something.
No, that's the original. So you've not seen the most recent thing?
No. Let's try and get it up. Is it worth getting up?
It's a post basically showing a new map of a section of like the old world, and it's all about Bretonnia. And it shows the like land of Bretonnia, all the heraldries they're going to use, names a lot of individuals, names the Bretonnian king, which as if they're going to stick to their original canon of timeline, it does key it into about 300 years earlier than when they set fantasy, the first that people were playing when it died. Because it names a character who's in the Bretonnian fluff historically, as one of the when it keys the king to it. But then it also lists, so that they're going to do Bretonnians, you know they're going to do orcs, because this Bretonnian king is known as the Orc Slayer. So if he's going to kill, he's going to have to kill something. There you go. And it lists in there wood elves and high elves in that post as well. And then that on social media blows up social media, because there's been nothing GW has said that they're going to adjust the scale of it, but there's nothing that's saying they has confirmed the scale they're doing at it. So people are going are winding each other up, saying it's going to be this scale for these reasons or that scale for that reason.
It's going to be what do they scale it now, because is it like a heroic 32 or something they do at?
Probably, yeah. Like,
it's certainly not 28 mil. Nowhere near 28.
Well, yeah, you're right. But people have been winding each other up saying it will be like in 15 mil, or 10 mil.
It won't be 10 mil. I guarantee that.
But you can see that still there is a lot of general thought from the wider gaming community that people saying, these renders that you've seen, like in the first post, it had some Kislev art, like renders of models. They can't reproduce that kind of detail at 10 mil. And it's like these people, you have not seen what forest dragons.
Well, GW were saying they can't produce it.
No, that's other people.
Oh, come on. They're stuck in the olden days.
Exactly. And it's like, you don't understand, the technology is already there. You know, like, and people, if anything, they can get too much detail on a 10 mil model nowadays. Not too little. It can actually be an argument that there's too much.
So some of the things that are real, though, is cleaning them up, it can be a pain in the arse, and getting the supports off. And I've had, using this soft resin, I have broken quite a lot of parts off, which is quite annoying. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So like you say, 3D printing, it is definitely a thing. Is it the end of physical metal miniatures? I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure.
No, I don't think so. But it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. If like if I was to sum up for me 2020 in total, it'd be that I'm seriously impressed by the quality of some 3D printing we've seen. It's been fantastic. It's like, wow, look at that. Like it is remarkable, and these are coming from one man shows, you know, like yourself for your Blackgate miniatures. It's like it's one person's like doing that. Amazing. Like when you put a team of dedicated designers, you know, like and behind it, you know, think what they could do.
Well, I mean, John Cromarty Forge is a one man band, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Everything's a everything that we talk about is a one man show. So.
Yeah. So one thing to talk about is like Patreons. They're an amazing thing, aren't they?
Yeah. It's like it's your mechanism to monetize your like hobby, isn't it? In terms of like what you're offering people.
There was there's a 28 mil. I can't remember the name of it, but it's about a $10 a month Patreon, which tends to be about the normal amount, £10, $10 a month.
Yep.
And I think he had about was it 450? No, it was like 4,500 Patreons for SDLs. You got to, oh my God, that's like 45 grand a month.
Like, yeah. Does he see it all?
Well, I'm sure Patreon take a cut, but it's like, oh, because is it the amazing thing about that model is it, whether you sculpt and you have 10 Patreons or 10,000 Patreons, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
Your time is sculpting is the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every additional person that backs you is just like free money.
Yeah. Amazing, huh?
So it's not a concern. I don't want to make it sound like a concern, but I'm glad Forest Dragon took a month off if he needs a month off. But I do fear that sometimes you've got to make sure we don't kill this golden goose that's laying these golden eggs every month.
Well, how would people kill it?
Because it's just potentially it's only one person, and they're not robots. People have lives and emotions, and you can only do something if you enjoy doing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they are enjoying doing it. Hopefully we're going to see many more ranges. I was a little bit, I'm not cheesed off, that'd be the wrong word, because I'm sure they'll look lovely, but I don't really understand the point in do people were badgering them to do another bloody set of vampire knights.
Oh, what, the blood dragons? Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was like, they're, I don't even know what they'd be in the game. They're, as far as I remember from fantasy, they're actually vampires on horses.
Yeah, they're a unit of lesser vampires, yeah.
But they were like incredibly powerful and obscenely expensive in the game because
because even a lesser vampire is still is still damn good, isn't it? Yeah.
Just try playing against them in Blood Bowl. Imagine if they didn't have bloodlust. But
or if the team was entirely vampire. Yeah. Like, yeah.
So it's like, but yeah, from what I understand it, the sculpting of cavalry is quite difficult and quite involved, and it takes a lot of time and effort. And it's like, I wish you'd have put that time and effort into doing something else, is all I'm saying.
Okay, right. So you would...
Selfish.
You would rather his resources went into starting a new range or, like, you know, something that has different rules?
Well, I think he's doing Bretonians. So I think that's the other part of what he's doing. So maybe crack on with those. Because, again, you only need two sets of knights, don't you? And then some squires, and that's your cavalry done for them. But I don't know what the point in doing... I suppose people have dragon princes for high elves or those empire guys with the hammers, whatever they were called.
Two-tone guards, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't do anything different in the game to the ones I've already got.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just imagine, there's only so much, life in the people's doing the sculpting. So I just, I hope they're all right, and I hope it's just a month off and everything's going to be cool.
Well, who knows? I mean, like,
But there isn't any... I mean, John does these good stuff, and that's 100% cool, but there isn't anything else in the market like these fellas at the moment.
But it's, say, like, who knows in the future? Like, I've no idea, how, if you don't have this skill, how long it takes to learn such a skill to do it, but I've no idea. Like, you might have five more individuals pop up in 2021 inspired by, well, if this guy can do it, I think I can. Yeah. You just don't know.
No, I understand. But I think at the end of the day, we've talked about 3D printing a lot. If you want dwarves, you can go to Cromarty Forge. He does some hybrid stuff that's sculpted 3D and then printed metal. There's a couple of ranges, wasn't there? There was a Vampire Norse, and the first range was... Oh, man, what was his first range? Ratman, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that's right. You should know this. You're too busy fucking painting, as always.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pay any attention. Just let me blabber wrong. Anyway, right, so we got a letter as well.
Fantastic. Shall I read it?
Yeah, should I put it on the screen? Mm-hmm. What does it say here? Guten Tag. So that must be German fella then.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you reading it? Oh, right. You put your paintbrush down, yeah? I thought it was like Captain Hook's. I thought you'd had your arm amputated and a brush put in its place.
I wish. Guten Tag, Barry and Paul. First of all, thanks for your hard work championing Warmaster. No, that's all right. The podcast was the very first thing I found when I searched online about Warmaster resources. Must have been around episode 90. And I can tell you that it helped me immensely as a new player, made me aware of Revolution and inspired me a lot. So in the words of George W. Bush, mission accomplished. Lincoln to George W. Bush. All right.
I think that was the first war in Iraq, wasn't it? Or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all right. I suppose, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Like, yeah, I'll take that. Two things I'd like to discuss. I recently tried out Warmaster on Tabletop Simulator and found it to be a surprisingly smooth experience and a great substitute for the tabletop. In case you're still accepting new players into your Discord league, how and where do I sign up? I tried looking for infos but couldn't find anything. I'm in Germany, so time zones difference won't be a problem.
I got to answer this. So sign up is the end of the year. So what date is it? Is it that tomorrow?
Yes.
Your wife's birthday, right? So you got to sign up by the end of tomorrow on the Discord. I think we've got about 10 European players and about 8 American players, and we're in 2 separate leagues.
Yep.
And it's very good if you can't play physically. If you could play physically, obviously you would, because you would. But if you can't, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Takes about 4 hours a game, which is obviously a bit too long, but yeah. You got to do.
Point two, I was surprised by the speed that 3D printing is changing the hobby over the last year or so. I think players will profit from an increase in available models, but traditionally manufacturers will face tremendous challenges. It certainly is the future, at least for small-scale miniature gaming. The Facebook Warmaster group turns up so many cool printing resources that I was thinking about buying a 3D printer myself. Ultimately, however, I decided against it when I did some research about the associated health hazards. From what I found out during an evening of online searches, the resin monomers can irritate and or permanently damage your lungs and skin, lead to dermal allergies and maybe cardiogenic. The smell during printing surprisingly...
That means cancerous.
Yeah.
Carcinogenic.
Yeah. The smell during printing surprisingly seems to be the least hazardous component of the process. Finally, the IPA used to wash the printed models is apparently highly hepatotoxic while being able to enter your body via skin contact, which will also facilitate entry of any resin monomers on your skin into your system. Ouch. Oh, and I read something about certain 3D printing chemicals causing atrophy of the testes. I don't remember which ones. The main point for me writing this mail is the following. As much as the Warmaster Facebook group, the podcast and Barry's YouTube channel, well, it's, you know, not only Barry's, but I'm not allowed on it, is full of intros and 3D printing.
You're on it now. This is
all right, yeah. So it's not Barry's YouTube channel. Right. It's full of infos and 3D printing and cool files you could print. There is little talk about safety considerations. I think there's a real risk to people unknowingly damaging their health with 3D printing because they disregard personal safety standards. Of course, everybody is responsible for himself, but I think the community should make an effort to inform aspiring 3D printers using the chemicals involved. They are not to be trifled with. Maybe you could talk about this on the podcast one day and what precautions you use or shouldn't use while 3D printing. I realize that I may be too fussy about all this. As a physician, I am trained to take health standards for myself and those around me seriously. So I was a bit worried when you talked about your house stinking to high heaven from all the printing. Please, Barry, wear gloves, a proper breathing filter, and only print in a well-ventilated area. I wouldn't want you to keel over from printing a wood elf army. Best regards, Jan Zapta. Zapataka.
I don't know. It's a good name. Yeah.
And then he shows a link to, I'm guessing, a safety thing.
It's very good. Mm-hmm. Very kind of him to think of me printing wood elves and then dying.
Dying what you're doing, what you love.
Doing what I love. I would like to say I wear a mask, but I don't.
All right.
Because even in the safety thing, it doesn't talk about wearing a mask as something you need to be doing. Ventilation, it talks about for sure. I do wear gloves.
I mean, I would have thought that this stuff that you use has warnings on it, and thus, if it was too toxic, you couldn't have it. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know about that. Resins have been renowned for being pretty toxic for a while now.
Right.
I mean, they do talk about things like if you're sanding or if you're drilling, like pinning and drilling and pinning and stuff, you need to wear a mask because if this shit gets inside you, I think they're worried it's a bit like asbestos used to be, that it won't break down and eventually 30 years from now, you'll develop some kind of cancer or whatever from this stuff that's been in 30 years. It's not going anywhere.
I suppose. I mean,
asbestos does.
So I mean, okay, Barry. So simple question, simple answer. Is 3D printing dangerous?
If you're not careful with it, you could certainly. I've certainly ended up with burns when I have been, because I wear gloves, but my kind of arms are exposed because I tend to wear short sleeves. Mm-hmm. I have ended up with burns from just cleaning stuff, and when I'm cleaning out the wash and cure station, even though there's hardly any residue left, because it still burns.
Okay. So minor burns. Anything else?
You could certainly make yourself ill. One day I had 3 failed prints and the cleanup, and that knocked me. I had to go to bed feeling very ill that evening.
Okay.
And that was in a ventilated area. So I've seen nothing, but I mean, it's like people talk about vaccines. They'd be happy to 3D fucking print, but not take a vaccine. This stuff, and you use it, you know, what's in it? And they're all different brands and they've all got different ingredients and it's all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you hear stories of people on the Facebook groups and say, oh, you know, I'm printing and my roommate's not happy because we share a bedroom and I'm printing next to my bed. It's a wonderful thing. Yeah. No, I wouldn't be happy. He keeps opening the window and my prints fail because it gets too cold. So he's in the fucking sleeping next to the fella and you got fucking printer running all night. But I think it should be like, most industrial machinery, as long as you treat it like a piece of industrial machine, with health and safety and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So during the summer months, obviously it's going to be in my garage because why wouldn't it be? But it's proving problematic during the winter months, which is why it's indoors. But the problem is that you can just buy these fucking things off Amazon and they're delivered tomorrow and you send them to complete Muppets.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're asking questions, you're going, you can't... You've done no research whatsoever. You've just bought this fucking thing and you don't know anything about anything.
Yep.
You're asking, like, is it safe to make fucking knives and forks and plates out of this stuff? No! Somebody was saying, can I print pieces of this and hide it in a Christmas cake? No!
Can I eat it?
Would it damage my children if they ate them? Yes!
Yes, yeah.
Unfortunately, my kids have spilt resin all over my machine. Well, what the fuck are they doing with the resin? But people just treat it like it's like, I don't know, you've got an inkjet printer in the corner of the room. It's just fucking, it's just a printer, mate.
It sounds like to me along the lines of why McDonald's had to put warning hot coffee on their coffee cups because the hot coffee, well, it contains hot coffee and people were litigating them that they were burning themselves with their hot coffee they've just ordered because they didn't know the hot coffee would be hot.
Okay. So another thing that people don't understand is like, you're not dealing with, what's the best word for it? You're not dealing with consumer level goods. So it's not like you bought a television. If there's a problem with the television, you take it back to wherever you bought it from. They give you a new television. So even if they ship it to you and it's faulty, they're only shipping you spare parts.
Yeah.
If you bought it direct from China. Yeah. So they just say, oh, your screen's fucked. It will send you a new screen. And you go, what do you mean you'll send me a new screen? Say, so, send you a new screen, you fit it. And like, it's an involved process, fitting a new screen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, certainly.
Don't get into this hobby if you're not happy taking things apart. If you don't fix your own phones or laptops or whatever, don't get into this fucking game.
Exactly, like and that's exactly the reason why I would not get involved in it, because I wouldn't have, like, if I got in my head that I wanted to do my own 3D printing, well, I don't have the space, basically. I don't have a space to do it in
away from kids.
I just don't, and it's like, well, that rules that out. And two, I'm not a DIY person.
Yeah, maybe, like, you could get Hannah's dad to come and fix it for you.
Exactly. I'm just not.
He's
I'm
called Paul. Like,
claim it was me. Yeah, like, so, yeah. And I think I would have found that out reading around the subject and imagining, like, okay, is this a thing I'm going to take on? I mean, obviously to our future listeners who are thinking about, like, copying what Barry does, do you have the right space? You know, like, as in, you know, I would... another big thing for me would have been the amount of what would I actually be printing? Do I need these things? Like, for example, an example given, the current Vampire Counts range that Forest Dragon have done for their next complete range. Honestly, they look fantastic. Now, but I have up on these shelves in front of me a finished Vampire Counts army. Mm-hmm. Am I at the stage where I would want to print my own Vampire Counts army, as in because they're newer and shinier, when I have something, a completely finished Vampire Counts army with the options that I want to use in it, and I would then get rid of this painted one, done, or sell it or whatever, and then do my own again? And it's like, no, I'd rather do something different. Like I say, I went in and got a Wood Elf one, from Forest Run, because I didn't own a Wood Elf army, and I was like, oh, cool. I guess that for me, and that's it. And that's basically, it's like, I'm not at that stage where I need to redo things I've already done, if you follow.
Maybe you could add a couple of units of Blood Knights.
Oh yeah, no, totally. Like, it's in. Oh, like, alternative things like a unit of Demigryphon Knights for my Empire. Like, that would be cool. Like that would be, yes, yeah, yeah. Like that would be good, but it wouldn't be enough for me to own a machine. Like for the things that I would want, for me, it's a lot easier just to click a few times, pay a money to excellent miniatures, or pay some money to printing in detail, and just get them to send it to me. I'm that stage. I'm that's where I am with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad it exists, but I've no interest. Like, it wouldn't be my bag.
Also, unless you go super cheap, and you can go super cheap, mm-hmm. You can pay like £100, and that can be your entire investment from the resin. You're going to be spending like £300 or £400, that kind of amount, by the time you've got everything you need.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have to print a reasonable amount of stuff to get that back, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
30 or 40 units, I guess, that kind of amount.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and then that's hoping everything holds out and you don't have to replace anything, which most of the parts.
I mean, like, so what I've got in front of me here is an eBay order came in. It's, you won't be able to see it, but it's some 3D printed chimeras, epic chimeras.
That kind of stuff you shouldn't be buying on eBay. How much did you charge?
Was a fiver or something like that?
For three?
For four.
Oh, it's not terrible, is it? But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's relatively easy to print.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Now, so the Chimera's gun has two supports on it, to like hold it in place here. You can't remove them without damaging the model.
Well, you try removing 400 of them.
Yeah, model. it's like... I don't know what your techniques are. I tried with the first one and it snapped the barrel off, obviously.
Because he should have cleaned them up before he cured them.
Yeah, yeah. So now, they should have come off when they were loose.
No, they should have come off before it had been cured in the UV.
Yeah. So, got it.
But it's still soft and malleable.
Well, it's still soft and malleable, yeah. So there's no way I can remove those two supports.
Well, there is. You just have to get a pair of clippers and clip.
No, I tried, Barry, just the act of doing it snaps the barrel off.
Well, the barrel's too thin then.
No, there you go. There you go.
Mm-hmm. He shrunk down a miniature. That's one of the bigger issues. If you buy like a 28 millimeter scale STL and try and shrink it down, there's things like spears and swords and barrels get too thin, and then you can't do anything with them.
So, I mean, it's like I can live with them on the model, but it's like I've had to, like, the one I took off, I was like, I don't think this will come off without damaging the barrel, which it did. I mean, it's like, but
what I was telling you about with my recent 3D printing. I've got everything's down and I'm working well, but I still damage models because you get those supports off. And like Forest Dragon Cavalry that I've been doing, some of the Wood Elf ones I've been looking at, they have as many as 30 supports on base. You've got to get off.
Yeah, it's loads.
Loads, because like they're really kind of dynamic, legs up in the air, this kind of... The supports everywhere, but you've got to get them all off.
Yeah, exactly.
Without damaging the model. Mm-hmm. And then there's nothing feels worse than when you've printed stuff and you damage it after it's...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, this... So, I mean, this was just something I saw at eBay. I was like, yeah, cool, I could do a few more chimeras. It allowed me to put a support unit into my mechanic, like one of the companies. And it's like, it wasn't a lot of money. But it's like, but seeing it, it's like, not great.
No, so how does this work? We'll talk a little bit about 3D printing now, because this is an interesting economics argument. That model is very, very, very likely on Thingiverse, and they're loaded the model and now they're selling them on eBay.
Yeah, probably is. Yeah.
They probably don't have the rights to sell them, but nobody can enforce this right because the person who's put the model on Thingiverse doesn't actually own it anymore. Thingiverse probably own the model.
Yeah, okay.
How these kind of creative licenses work. Mm-hmm. So if I wanted to also print off those Chimeras and sell them on eBay, what do I sell them for? £4.50? £4? And then where does it end?
I don't know.
So how does anybody make money 3D printing when some fella can just print them on his machine at home and put them on eBay?
I don't know.
Whether they got the license or not, who's going to protect this license? How on earth is... Sorry to fuck around with Forest Dragon again, but if somebody's printing his stuff, who knows whether they've got a license or not?
Well,
only he knows.
Yeah, exactly.
How is he going to enforce that on eBay? It's just not possible.
No, I don't think it is it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. So, yeah, so that's unfortunate. But you're dealing with somebody that's new to 3D printing, I guess, with those miniatures that you're...
I don't mind. It's just like, oh, okay, cool. I mean, I do like to get new things as in terms of just to see what I think of it. Like, so like that tells me, oh no, that's a problem. I wouldn't pick them up again.
So it also tells me that I could make £1.25 for each one of them and print off. And you could probably get, let me have a look at it again and see how many I could get on my machine.
There you go.
You have to speak, I think. Where have you gone?
Yeah, sure. There you go.
Oh, you could probably get about 20 on the machine. So that's not bad, is it? You get like £25, £30 worth of stuff, but then you got to clean them up.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if he gave an option for them cleaned or not cleaned, I would have definitely gone for the cleaned option.
No, that's not the only support that was on the model. That's not what...
Yeah, no, exactly. I hear what you're saying, but like...
He's cleaned off
Yeah.
like maybe 80 or 90% of the supports, but he hasn't noticed those.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't design the file.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Right, what else we got to talk about? 2021, it's got to be better than this, hasn't it?
Well, what's your hopes for Warmaster with 2021?
I'm going to do another GT, but I don't think I can fucking plan it until probably 2022, realistically. you need a good run at it to plan it, and the place you're going has got to be open and vaccinated, and I don't know. Realistically, I think 2021 is going to be a mostly write-off again, or at least planning.
In terms for a European event. So what
stage in 2021 do you imagine they're going to take the reins off and say, meet up with whoever you want in whatever numbers you want?
Once the majority of people have, that need to have the vaccine have it.
But everybody needs to have a vaccine. That's how vaccines work.
Well, but then, you know, so once that is achieved.
Yeah. I keep talking to you about that film Contagion that I watched.
Go on.
Getting the vaccine was the start of the end, but the end was a fucking long process. So they said in America, they said they were going to get 20 million doses out by the end of the year. They got 2 million out. They got 350 fucking million to vaccinate.
I hear your negativity, Barry, but then I've got to...
And it's two doses each. Two.
Yeah, so okay, but I hear that, but then when the alternative is a locked down economy where people lose their jobs and their careers and nothing happens,
schools, all that,
schools
shit.
Don't yeah. happen.
Oh
schools
yeah, yeah. Happen. So you're missing the point.
So hang on, but so you're telling me that it's out of all possibility you could imagine that a school isn't given 1,000 doses of the vaccine. And they vaccinate their own kids in one day.
Yeah, well, I'm not arguing with you, Paul. What I'm saying is I'm seeing no evidence of any of this happening.
Well, because that portable vaccine isn't in circulation yet. Apparently Monday it starts.
Well, let's see. I pray to God that on Monday we've got 10 million doses and they're firing them into fucking arms left, right and centre.
But that is the intention.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so. Yeah. But yeah, for good. I want to see, yeah.
I mean, from someone who's had the Pfizer vaccine, like...
The Bill Gates 5G vaccine.
The Bill Gates 5G vaccine. It's like the act of the vaccine, it's not complicated. Like, you know, in terms of it's over before you know it. Yeah, and it's like they've put in the 15 minutes of observation afterwards just because, I don't know, they feel they should.
No, they had to because they had allergic reactions.
Yeah, but there isn't any actual observation of it, of you. Like, you have the vaccine and you just then sit somewhere else for 15 minutes. Your observation is yourself.
Yeah. But the difference was, I've had my flu jab recently, you just walk in and they stab you. You don't even sit down, they stab you. Okay. It's like literally you're in the building 60 seconds.
Yeah. Good. Like, I mean, that's how you'd want this, you know, a COVID vaccine to be.
This is what, right. Okay. You look at it for the wrong way. I'm not negative because I want it to be like some kind of fucking Christian Marxist or something, flagellant. But I want fucking vaccine centers up 24 hours a day, 7 days a fucking week.
Yeah, it's coming.
Fucking queuing up and just bang, bang, bang.
Barry, that's coming. That is exactly what's...
Listen, don't give me this Boris booster bullshit.
You've got to have the drug in the first place.
Have you seen the fucking idiots that are in charge? Have you seen that fucking guy who's in charge of the teachers? What's his fucking name? I can't. I blanked him out. I can't handle
the cabinet minister in charge of
education, Gavin Williamson. My fucking God, that man! I wouldn't even let him take out the bins.
he was in charge of defence before.
Did you hear what he said to Russia?
What did he say?
Give away, Russia! He said, I told Russia to shut up and go away or something. He said the fucking lemon.
What about?
The problem we have, what about when they were fucking poisoning people?
Oh, okay, right.
Mm-hmm. In Shrewsbury or wherever.
Shrewsbury, yeah.
So the problem we have, and it may be a worldwide problem, but we pay our politicians so little that we accept absolute fucking dross as MPs. Absolute garbage. These people are so talentless, you wouldn't have them in a fucking corner shop.
And that's because you say we pay them too little.
Too little, way too little. Do you think there are people who run FTSE 100 companies that would be a fucking MP? Would they bollocks? They are like 10 million a year. They're responsible for thousands of people. And we've got these fucking people that are just idiots that just happen to know somebody at some point or
right. So you're talking about a failure of our parliamentary system.
Also, you look at them, look at the cabinet, man, and it's not just this cabinet. You look at the Labour's until December last year, Labour's shadow cabinet, they were full of fucking you look at them, you go, this can't be it. This cannot be the choice.
It's as good as we get.
This is the best we have. Where's our Barack Obama, man? What are we?
Yeah, he's pretty impressive, isn't he?
How have we ended up with this fucking shaved gorilla with blonde hair in charge? Bibbling and babbling. Fucking hell, man. I swear, right. If your wife was still a teacher, she'd have Gavin Williamson's face on the toilet door. She'd be throwing darts in it.
Yeah, it's... It's interesting her right, because they talk about the vaccine in schools. It's like, yeah, it's interesting her comments on it. It's like, that ain't gonna work. like they want kids to vaccinate themselves or test themselves, and you're like, you've never been in a school, have you?
they'll be pushing each other.
It's like you can't trust them to glue their bit of work into their textbook. Like, you can't trust them to do that.
So it was brilliant. They were breaking up, and on the day before Christmas Eve, I think that was the last day of schools, so it might have been a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. They told them at 4 o'clock that they had schemes for the first day back.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and just one more thing.
Have a good holiday.
Have a good holiday. No. Oh, just a little thing. Little thing. Little. Would you mind vaccinating your whole school and with like no resources?
You can ask parents. Yeah. Apparently they're going to give you one person from the armed forces between each four schools, secondary schools or something.
One?
1,500. There's 1,500 armed forces experts being sent in or something. Must be like you special forces. They're going to like have machine guns for vaccination.
And what are they going to do? A school?
No, it's one every four schools or something.
So what are they going to do?
No idea. Well, I don't know. They're coming in. They've got to save the day.
How?
Got no idea. That was the big announcement, wasn't it? The army is coming in to save the day.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, anyway,
Hopefully next year is better than this year.
Yeah, it's going to be better. And
it's got to be better.
And certainly when we're allowed to again, when we're out of the life we're in, I will run events again and rebuild an event scene again. Now, I'll do that. Of course I will. Yeah, because it's a reason for doing a living, not that isn't just work.
And we're going to be Euro GT and it'll be good.
Yeah, and yeah, I understand.
And if we do it again in Bruno,
yeah,
which is the plan, hopefully. Yeah. Alice has already agreed to take us on a battlefield tour of Napoleonic battle. I can't remember what it was, Napoleon era.
The Battle of Bruno.
No, while you talk, I'll tell you what it is. It was a big one.
Okay, yeah, I can understand then if a GT doesn't happen next year because it just can't realistically happen because of timing and planning it. But yeah, we can hope. I'm more positive than you.
Boris is more positive than you, but it doesn't bring me any. What was the name of that big?
Don't worry about it.
It was a big one. It was big. I'm going to look like a muppet now for not knowing the name. But we're going to go. We're going to go tour the battlefield. Yep.
Cool. Excellent.
And you'll like it because you're in Napoleonics.
I want to fire a musket.
All the Austerlitz.
Oh my God, that was a massive one.
I know, that's what I said.
Wow. Austerlitz. That's huge.
I think it was Russians against,
Austrians.
I'm not going to embarrass myself, but it was a big one.
It was huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're going to go and tour the site on the Friday.
Fantastic.
Whenever the Euro GT is again.
Yeah, the weekend. Did you hear what my trust did about about leave? Like
holiday. No more leave for you, Muggets. I told you.
They haven't taken it away, but they've basically said, so that leave, the paid leave that you're going to have, mm-hmm. would you not have it and instead work instead?
Yes, of course I will. And then next year you'll give me back, will you?
Yeah. And not for any more money. No, because like we won't pay you more. You won't end up with more in the bank account. You'll have just gone to work instead of not going to work.
Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
You're anyway.
Exactly. And you're just like, what? You know, like, yeah. Well,
but look, we haven't got any more money. You do some more work.
It's like,
do that for free.
It's like literally, it's like there's nothing stopping you taking extra shifts, bank shifts, when you are on leave. That's not, you know, people do that. So, but instead of doing that, can you just work instead? And you're like, and they fitted in this email. They had a bit of a guilt trip to it as well, as in like implied that the reason we're in such a bad state is your fault. And you're like, what?
I'm surprised they're not saying, you know, and if you don't do this, then come April, everybody will have to take a 20% pay cut. Otherwise, we'll have to sack half of you.
Oh, my God. I tell you what, if they took away my leave and just rostered me on shifts instead, I would literally tell my matrons I'm not turning up. You know, like, as in, like, that was my leave. Because at the moment I'm doing bank shifts as a vaccinator out of Basildon, you know, but that's my choice and that's extra hours and, you know, I'm getting paid for it, you know, because that is part of the solution. But if they turned around and just took away your leave and like you're working instead now, I wouldn't turn up. I'd be like, no.
I'll tell you what you'll do. You could go on strike, couldn't you?
It's a version of a strike, but I'd be like,
you're not allowed to.
I'd be like, you've rostered me onto work there, but I'm not going to turn up. So just FYI, I'll be ill.
So there must be something they can do to put us on like a war footing. That means you just work every day, no pay. Doesn't matter. You're coming in 7 days a week.
I don't know, but because we are in a state of emergency now. So this is the highest level that the trust like can be in. Like there is no higher upper level.
Well, if only we hadn't done something really stupid less than a week ago that's still baked to the fucking pie and we haven't opened that pie yet. So happy days.
I don't know, but there is nowhere now we're at gold, I think it's gold level or whatever it is. Like is in there is nowhere else to go. But it doesn't mean that because you're in this state of emergency, it doesn't mean that suddenly we're gonna have more staff or more resources or more beds. Like all it changes is I think that we get more money from the government, I think. I don't know what else it actually what effect we need these effects now. It's like we don't need them at a next budgetary year or something. Like if by going into a state of emergency suddenly you had 50 nurses turn up from somewhere that you could that were useful, mm-hmm. that would mean something. You've broken the do not break glass sign or something. I don't know where you keep this stuff.
But I'm not sure it's the Fires of Gondor, isn't it? Fires of Gondor.
Well, yeah, literally, it's like lighting the Fires of Gondor, but Rohan's already there. Like, as in, like, they're the one, and you're like, oh, is there nobody else?
The army of the dead. Where's the army of the dead?
We're all here now. It's like, well, who are we calling for? It's like, it's an interesting thing to say, is in terms of, oh, this is the thing, it's made the news. It's like, this is the state we're in. But it isn't like, what, me running an ED, what is that going to, what change will that make to me?
Well, the only change will be that people will stop coming in because they'll all get shit scared again and nobody will come into any.
Do you know what? The thing they should really, I think, generally, they should say right now is that we are so unsafe that if you come into the ED, you will catch COVID.
Don't bother wearing a mask. You're fucked.
No. Like, if you come in here, you will catch COVID. We're not responsible for that. As in, like, that's your risk of coming in. But we can almost guarantee you will catch COVID. Now, is your ED attendance worth contracting the virus? That is, I think you're at that stage now.
I think you were at that stage when I came in.
Yeah, but that is the stage where you need to be public about it. You need to be saying, this is how poor this or bad the thing is here, how rife it is. It's already gone through all the stuff. They're either immune or off sick. You know, like, if you turn up now for your hurt finger, you will catch COVID.
But you still have to... My boy had his appendix out and I spent 2 days in hospital, but there's nothing you can do about that. And I knew I was rolling the dice. What am I going to do?
Yeah, we know exactly. Sometimes you're forced to roll it, aren't you?
Yeah.
But
I rolled double one, as you would, being an health player.
But it's like, honestly, like, I saw Red One News article, BBC, saying that people in Essex have been very responsible, only calling 999 for emergencies. And you're like, what?
Well, Eric agrees about that.
Oh my God. It's in like, and that's public information. That's like, and it's like, really? Not what I've been seeing. I've still been, sadly, in lockdown one, we did have a less of attendances. But never since.
Do you know, just before we go, because I've nearly done enough of this. Yeah. It's killing me. So, do you know what tier four actually means, what it says? Like, tier one is medium, tier two is high, tier three is very high. Do you know what tier four is?
High.
So stay home. That's what that
All right. Okay.
Stay home. And do you know how many people are staying home? Do you know what my mother-in-law did yesterday?
Met up with somebody, probably.
She went for a walk. Not to get anything, because she went to a walk to Chelmsford Town Centre with her dog, and they got the bus home. Why?
I don't know.
I wanted to go to the market, but was it open? No. The market's got... She said, no, the market wasn't open. So I walked around Chelmsford a bit and then got the bus home. Why? It's a stay home! Stay home!
Well, it's tier five's coming now. Tier five.
What's it say? Stay in bed. Stay under.
Tier five, you can't look out the window.
I've said it before. I'm on a main road, and the first lockdown, there was like half cars a day on the main road. Now it's like peak rush hour. Yeah. It's like, whatever. Yeah. Stay on my ass.
Okay, cool. Right. I think we're done with the podcast, Barry.
Done with 2020. Fuck
2020.
Come on, bring 21 on.
Big 2021, yep.
I'm keeping all the kids up, and at midnight, we're going to run out of the house and run out the back door and run in the front door. That's what you're supposed to do to get rid of this shit.
What?
You go out your back door, you go around the front of the house, come in the front door.
What's that do for you?
I don't know. It's some kind of ducking witch doctory tradition.
Okay, all right, okay.
Evil years.
All right, okay, got it.
Get your kids up at midnight. Let's get rid of this.
Yep, okay. All right.
Take it easy. See, have a nice 2020. What's that, people?
You too.
you like to know more?